as we welcome attorney Gavin Steinhobel from Kloppers Inc. to the morning shows, a regular visitor on a Wednesday. Nice to see you again, Gav.
Yeah, it's great to be back, Dave. Nice rainy day. I think it scotched my golf for the afternoon.
Oh, look, it's clearing, I think.
I believe so, yeah.
I know that the forecast is for very little rain today.
Oh, good.
1 millimeter max. So that's a forecast. Of course, you know, things change. The coast tends to be very microclimatish, and you can have pouring rain in Belito. Yeah. Salt Rock isn't clear as a bell. You know, this happens.
Yeah.
But, your golf is safe.
Might be on the cards. Well, it never really buckets down for hours on end here. You know, you get a bit of a light drizzle and it starts and stops, which is not too bad.
Yeah, mind you, last night, though, it was giving it horns. Hey, wow. And I believe the R102 coming in today was very slow and go as a result. Yeah. Further down towards Teguini, lots of people in trouble there because drainage isn't what it should be.
Yeah.
They've either got no water or far too much.
Or far too much. That sounds like South Africa.
That's terrible. And, you know, as a property expert, I'm sure you'd be interested to know that Johannesburg's iconic Ponte skyscraper, we discussed it a while back, is looking for a new owner.
Okay.
You can imagine. Yeah. I mean, at one stage, it was considered to be the most desirable address in Joburg.
You know, iconic, world-class, stunning architecture, groundbreaking.
And then it devolved rather rapidly.
Yeah.
It became one of the biggest
dens of.
Well, yes, and it became the biggest sort of dumping ground.
Dumping ground, yeah.
It had three stories of garbage in the that lovely courtyard area. Yeah. It was this cylindrical shape, and everyone just, instead of carrying it down in the lift or whatever, they just poured it over the balcony.
Of course.
So just filled up and filled up. It was a bit like an archaeological dig when they were clearing it out, apparently. I'm serious.
Found old VCR players and things like that.
Yes, so, and a few interesting things that weren't supposed to be there.
What would happen to all the tenants at the bottom, the residents at the bottom?
It was apparently you had to wear a clothes peg on the nose. It was just disgusting.
Jeez.
But, I mean, it was that stage of things, the devolution of an iconic building that I think it was at one stage almost a hijacked building. I'm not sure if that still applies to as a term for buildings that have been taken over by, shall we say, other than the owners of the building.
That's right, yeah. It was a big thing in Joburg. Even here in Durban, there were a few, you know, blocks that were fairly empty, and the next thing all the Nigerians and so forth move in, and it becomes, you know, prostitution and drugs that are peddled there, and that's it. You know, nobody else can live there.
Now, so, I believe, and we, you know, I don't want to get back into the subject of too much contention.
Too morose.
But I believe that part of this expropriation without compensation idea was to address that sort of situation.
Well, you know, that's not true, because it's a fact that the municipality, Port Elizabeth Municipality, did it. They expropriated buildings that were not being painted properly. And all they did is they just lumped up fines every month until the fines sort of are the equivalent of the building, and then they sold the building in execution to recover the fines. So there are mechanisms, all municipalities have them, to deal with situations where buildings are derelict. You don't have to expropriate them. So, you know, especially the expropriation without compensation is only got one goal, and that's farmland. And, you know, there was an act there's a bill that's been put forward now with the Equitable Access to Land Act, where the idea is that we're going to eventually say, well, you know, the ownership of agricultural land should reflect the demographics of the country. And, you know, that's all fine and well if you want to see everything through a racial prism, whereas what the country needs is that the people that can farm do farm. And
on that subject, I was very interested to see on the Business Tech site today that apparently there has been, and I'm just looking for the report because I don't want to quote out of context, but the gist of it is that South Africa is seeing a large influx of farmers and farm laborers from other African countries. You know, one hears constantly of South African farmers being attracted elsewhere because of harsh conditions, etc., and that you know, as a result, food security might be a problem. But it seems that there's a lot of farming activity from, well, outside of South Africa, people looking for opportunity and coming in. I wonder if that is something that
I think, Dave, it's such a big topic. I mean, if you want to deal with land and the issues surrounding land, you really have to go back right to the Bantustan sort of TBVC states and what happened there and how things evolved. And I'm quite happy for us to have a conversation like that. Maybe we should schedule one.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, when I look at all of what, you know, that's going on, I mean, I see that our Competition Commission is now, wanting to levy huge fines on the American companies, the tech companies especially, and it just seems like we are really entrenched in this sort of, it's almost like the ideological decision has been made to alienate the biggest economy and our second biggest trading partner in the world. And it just to me, I always wonder why now, you know, why sign the expropriation bill now? Why do all these things now? And I realize when you think about it, it's all massively diversionary from the true problem. The true problem is that the political class in this country are like that chap that you know has a middling salary, drives the best car, drives a house that you can't understand how he affords it, has kids in private school, and you wonder how you can afford that when you're battling. And you realize eventually, but the only way he can afford it is by stealing from his employer, which is what's been happening. We're their employer, and our taxes have been stolen over decades now. And the problem is that money's running out. So now there's a casting about, well, do we increase VAT, you know? Do we steal more from our employer? Or do we just expropriate farms, you know, for nil compensation? Or how are we going to fill this coffer that's now empty? You know, we've stolen everything. And, you know, we can't really turn around and ask the World Bank for more loans because, we're up to 70% of our GDP on borrowings. And we're paying R1 billion a day in interest on those loans. And so, you know, the 30 years of people saying, softly, 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 you know, watch out with your policies, these are going to end in tears. Well, I think finally we're there. I get that same feeling I used to get in the late 80s and early 90s, that the system that we're in is unsustainable and it must collapse and it must change. And I think we're getting to that point now, and we're seeing these erratic policies, this stupid foreign policy, if we have a foreign policy, or we just, and I see all these bad decisions and these things that the government is doing to harm the economy. And well, I think, that well, that's just desperation.
There's a wealth tax warning now for South Africa that's been issued today on the business side.
Yeah, you know, so I was listening the other day to, I think it was Frans Cronje saying, look, if we could take our direct foreign investment up from 20% to 40%, okay, make it attractive for people to invest here and show them that they're going to get a return, and when they get a return that they can actually take their money out, that the government's not going to steal it. And if we could just double it, then we would get down from a 40% unemployment to about 10% in 20 years, okay? Yes, 20 years sounds like a long time, but in 20 years' time, people will be very grateful for these good policies because, you know, we've now got almost everybody working. But instead, we do the opposite. We're going to make sure that we do our direct foreign investment with all our crazy socialist policies and alienating America and making things so unwelcome for business, and then pushing up taxes all the time and really throttling our economy. And then we're going to make sure that's going to be down, probably to direct foreign investment will go down to 10%, in which case it'll take 100 years. You know, so, you know, the ultimate thing is that we seem to have politicians, and I don't blame them. You know, they drive around in Lamborghinis and they've got 10 people in their cavalcade when they go anywhere, 10 BMWs, and they, you know, they've got houses in Cape Town, and they fly first class and so forth and so on. Of course they're out of touch, you know, but I've noticed over the years they just get fatter and fatter when you see them on TV, and when you look at the people around you, they just get thinner and thinner.
It's actually an interesting thing. Yeah. But I see Julius Malema lost a lot of weight. I think he was taking Ozempic or something like that. But Stian has certainly shown quite a tendency towards expanding his presence on television.
So while all these other issues are important, I think that they've been thrown into the circus merely as a diversion from the fact that we've been grossly mismanaged. There's been a lot of corruption. You don't have to be a genius to notice that the power's off again. And,
do you think that was coincidental, or do you think that there was a cause and effect scenario where, well, NERSA said, sorry, you can't have the 32% increase that you were looking for. We're going to give you 17. Well, the lights went out again.
Yeah, I'm also told that, because we buy subgrade coal under BEE contracts, that we have to spray quite a lot of oil into it, and that the supplier of the oil is owed 500 million rand. Eskom cannot or will not pay him, and they've stopped supplying the oil.
Oh.
And that the real, the truth, because, I mean, our government has lied to us about Eskom for decades now, and if those weren't all lies, Eskom would be working. Because if everything they said was true, we wouldn't have a problem. And I think the truth is far more nefarious than, oh dear, one of the switches tripped at Kusile. Well, Kusile doesn't exist anymore because we closed that because we were going on for windmills and solar. But, I think the truth of the matter is that it is still rotten and it hasn't been fixed. And the people there are still grafters and carpetbaggers, and that... I think it was a fake Elon Musk post, but as somebody did post pretending to be Elon Musk, that load shedding is not a problem, it's a business model. And there are people that benefit from this. And every time there's a panic, there'll be billions spent on consultants and special symposiums and how are we going to fix this. And it's just a racket. And I think South Africans, by and large, see through it now. And what we really need is change, and we need change in the right direction, because countries don't just by coincidence be poor countries and rich countries. It's a decision you make. You can decide to be a poor country by having stupid policies that historically have never worked anywhere in the world, or you can follow what countries that are wealthy do. And we just don't do that. And you don't have to be a rocket science. You don't have to reinvent economics. Just do what has made the wealthy countries wealthy. And I'll tell you what, there's a reason why everybody flocks to the West and nobody goes from the West elsewhere. And that is because it's the standard of living is so much higher. They've done something right. So find out what they're doing, and I can tell you what they're doing because everybody knows. They have a free market system, they respect the rule of law, they've got private property, and they've got freedom of speech. And that's it. That's all you really need.
Once again, we've solved the problems of...
And, we've watched the West go away from that model in a big way with big social schemes and high taxation. And we've seen the West start declining. And I think they've all panicked now and they've gone, well, you know what, we've got to go back to our core values, the things that made us successful in the first place. And we also as a country need to say, well, what's the old saying? If you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. And, we're digging harder than ever now with our stupid policies.
So what sort of contribution do you think the private sector or us as individual South Africans who are looking for the change that we know that we're not going to be able to experience, what sort of contribution to the upliftment of our economy do you think we could?
Well, it's very, the starting gun went off 30 years ago. Mm. And everybody ran in different directions. The truth of the matter is that, if you look after your economy, look, it's very simple. If you look at economic growth over the last 30 years, it's declined now to just over 1%. Okay, so that graph is going south. If you look at the population increase in South Africa, that graph is going viciously north. So obviously things are going to get worse and worse for South Africans until the bottom graph starts heading north and catches up to the top graph. Now, if you want that to happen, then you do policies that foster your economy. You don't have to tax people to death. I think everybody getting the 350 would rather have a job from a company that isn't taxed to death. You know, if you keep taking money from companies, they can't grow, they can't compete, and it's not a very welcome environment for other people to come and open factories in South Africa. And we need to industrialize. There's a lot of people who need jobs, and industry is what provides the jobs. So we need to have a favorable business climate here. Now, if you run around saying, well, you know what, we as the government, if we feel that there's an asset that you've got that we'd like, we're going to take it from you and not compensate you for it. Well, I'm certainly not going to bet the farm in an economy like that. I'll go elsewhere. You know, Botswana is growing at 4%. I mean, we just obviously, and I mean, put ideology aside. Just have a look at what's happened. What's happened to our currency? What's happened to our economic growth? What's happened to our industries? What's happened to our SOEs? You know, just have a look at that and then say, honestly to yourself, I don't care if you're ANC or you're Marxist or whatever, just honestly say to yourself, is this working? And you'd have to go, no, it's not working. Well, and can we do better? Yes, we can.
It is working extremely well for those that are benefiting from, and they are the ones that are calling the shots.
Yes.
It's a strange phenomenon. It's supposedly the other way around, you know, public servants work for the public, but it seems as if it's completely inverted.
Well, you know what? They've gutted the goose that lays the golden eggs. I mean, we're down to 1.5 million people paying about 67% of our taxes.
Sure.
Sorry, 1.5% of the population, rather, paying over 60% of the taxes. So, you know, and then you go, well, I'm going to make the climate as horrible for them as I can by pushing up their taxes all the time. By threatening to expropriate their property without compensating them. And those people slowly leave. And they take their money with them and they take their expertise with them. I'm quite a fan of Thomas Sowell. And I read a piece that he wrote about Uganda. And so what happened is the Indian community in Uganda ended up earning 80% of the economy. They were just very industrious and intelligent and hardworking people, and they just outperformed Ugandans generally, and they ended up with 80% of the economy. Idi Amin, of course, I'm going to stop quickly for an anecdote. Idi Amin wanted to call Uganda Idi after himself, and he told his ministers this is the plan, and everybody nodded because they said, okay, well, of course, you know, you're the boss, and if we say anything, we might get killed. And one chap, one old intransigent minister, put his hand up. He says he didn't think it was a very good idea. And everybody was quite shocked. And they said, wow, goodness, you know, how can you stand up to Idi Amin like that? And he said, well, he's been thinking, you know, calling the country Idi. He said, you know, in Cyprus, they call Cypriots. And in any event, the point Thomas Sowell makes is that what happened in Uganda is they chased all the Indian population out. They had to leave, I think, in a very short time, like 24 or 48 hours. They took over all their businesses, and the entire economy collapsed. It collapsed to the extent where, after Idi Amin and everything, they actually invited that whole community back again. They could take their properties back and their businesses back. And, you know, they're back to where they were. 80% of the economy is again in those hands, I understand. And that's purely because what makes the difference is not the capital, it's not the farms, it's the attitude of the people that are making a success of those things, you know. And if you take people often go, just take Ngonyama Trust and all the people that live there, and you go, well, you know, nothing's really changed for them, and there's no real fireworks or sparks going on there. And you go to Urania in the middle of bloody well nowhere, and that's a functioning and thriving place. The difference is the management of the place, the attitude of the people in charge, you know. And again, in South Africa, it's not going to do anybody any good to get rid of all these farmers, okay? Because the problem isn't that. The problem is that a lot of farms were redistributed and none of them have worked because the attitude of the people in charge is wrong. The attitude towards farming, it's not a get-rich-quick scheme. It's a generational thing that you pass on to your kids, and you make it incrementally better as you go along. You know, if you take all of these farmers and you go back three generations, they were dirt poor. you know, and I know that from my own family, you know, the farming side of my family. They, you know, four generations, they were Bevooners and poor whites. And so it doesn't happen overnight. And this idea, this pipe dream, that this country will change overnight from haves and have-nots to everybody just suddenly being well away, it's not going to happen. It's going to take work. It's going to take good policies. And we need to change. If we don't change, it's fine. But then you are condemning people to generational poverty.
So what are the opportunities that you see within the agricultural sector?
Well, there's no opportunities in the agricultural sector because it's become a very unpleasant place to operate in, because you've got the sword of Damocles hanging over your head with the government saying, listen, chaps, we can take your farms if we want to without compensating you, which, of course, puts the heebie-jeebies into the banks, because they go, well, I can't really lend money to farmers if the security that they're giving me is a farm that might be expropriated. So, you know, it's not a great place to be, but, you know, they're tough people. They've been doing it for generations, and they've stuck it out, you know. And I think they just put their heads down, they do their work, they grow their crops. I mean, it's a very small percentage of the people in this country that are feeding the entire country. And if you want to mess with that, I think you're making a mistake. The point is, you cannot lift yourself in a bucket by pulling at the handle, you know. And we in this country, we need to look at having the right attitudes. You know, we can't have large swathes of area where people can't own their land, they don't pay rates and taxes, and you wonder, oh, why is it so rubbish to live over there because there's no sewage or garbage collection? Or, well, the people are also quite happy not to pay rates, so who's going to pay for that? Yeah. You know, in our case, in Belito, for instance, we're paying all the rates that pay for services in areas where people don't pay rates. So it's not a system that can work indefinitely. I mean, and I think the honeymoon's over long ago. I think 30 years, we have to look at ourselves as a country and go, why are we the worst performers when it comes to economic growth, when it comes to unemployment? And I can tell you why. Because our policies have been lousy and because our leadership has been corrupt. Now, there's a lot, I'm on social media quite a bit now, I see a lot of young black people especially that are starting to notice that the emperor has no clothes. And I think change will come from the next generation. People who've had a little bit more access to education, people who've had a little bit more access to foreign news, and have an idea of what's going on in the globe, but we're behind at the moment, and we need to. The gun went off, you know, 30 years ago, and we haven't even started running towards the finish line.
Well, once again, shall we say, Gavin Steinhoepel calls a shot, yeah. Calls a spade a spade, and may have really depressed you, and I'm sorry about that, but you know, look, it is what it is, and I think quite
Dave,
right.
I think, you know, in my defense, I think it's more of a rallying cry, you know, that we say to young people, listen, you know, we can't carry on like this. You guys need to get behind, you know, a different way of doing things, a different order of business, you know. And I think all South Africans in their hearts know that if we carry on with the people we have as politicians, that in 100 years, nothing in this country will have changed. It'll only have got worse.
Yeah, well, there it is. And a good point to end it on. Gavin Steinhoepel, attorney at law. If you need a good attorney in your corner, you hear how he presents a case. He's a good man to know if you're in a bind. But if you've got a property-related issue, he's also an expert in that regard. So you'll find him down in the Belito Village at Kloppers Inc. Gavin, we'll catch up in a week's time.
Thank you, Dave.